Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. My name is Chris Lamberth. I'm your host, as always. This is a special COVID-19 session. This is probably the first of the COVID-19 sessions. And I have somebody that is a friend of the podcast, a podcaster, an author of the new book, Grad School, a $70,000 Phone Charger, comedian, podcast author, Mr. Jim Search. How the hell are you, man?
Hey, I'm doing all right, given everything right now, man.
Right.
As we were saying before we got on the show here, but like, because everything going down, you know, my girlfriend is on a call right now, and she's in the living room, and she needs more space than me, so I am now recording from the bathroom. So this is like Jim Jam from the can.
So we got to see, the listeners have to understand how we just keep going. We're Americans, you know?
Fucking right.
It's like we keep going under a pandemic. We're still providing content. We're not going live on Instagram like some of our colleagues that shouldn't be live. They shouldn't go live. Like, I love most of the people that I follow on social media. They're very talented comedians and writers. Some of them don't need to be putting out content.
Well, I think, like, but, you know, I will say this, though, and someone raised a very valid point, is that when, you know, our fellow comedians, et cetera, they're going live, that's not necessarily for us. That is for the people that follow them, right?
Of course it is.
So, you know, as much as we sit here as comics, and we're like, why the fuck are you doing this right now? I do think, though, in the same breath, though, that if you are, in fact, going to go live, at least, you know, have some decency to go scripted.
Yeah.
Like, nobody wants to see you rant on Facebook Live. Like, that's not... Shit, I could just open my door, or I could open my window right now and see some crazy person outside doing the same thing. So, like, have a plan going into it if you are, in fact, going to go produce content live. You know what I'm saying?
And then
I can't tell people how to run their lives.
That's true. And then part of me feels like I'm just an asshole. I'm like, you don't need to fucking do that, you know. But whatever. It's just, you know, whatever, man. I don't know. How is it over there over in Brooklyn?
Over at the Jam?
Yeah.
Over in Jim Jam Studios. Yeah. Well, I'll speak to Brooklyn at least. So, you know, I'm in Crown Heights.
Right.
You know, I will say that, like, I'm a devout practicer of the social distancing.
Yeah.
So, like, I really haven't gone outside too much. I mean, I've gone out for, like, groceries.
Right.
And, like, I'll take a walk. Like, I'm not fucking crazy. Like, I have to get outside the house sometimes.
Yeah.
But now the energy, it's just weird. Like, you can feel it in the air, like, where I am, at least. Like, it's just people, it's just very quiet, it's pensive, like, the energy is just, you know, everybody knows what's going on out here, and it's crazy, man.
What was your favorite store like? What was Western Beef like? Was it post-apocalyptic?
Oh, man, my beacon,
yes.
My light of hope, is
yeah.
That what you meant?
Yes.
I think you said Western Beef, but what I heard was, how is your beacon of hope doing right now? what is your sanctuary like right now? You know, as you know, some of your listeners may or may not know, Western Beef is my preferred grocer of choice.
Yeah, before we get the report on how it is in that store, how did you become to be so fond of this store? Like, my listeners know, like, that I like Wegmans, and you're an upstate New York guy. But let's talk about Western Beef and why you love it so much.
Sure. Yeah. We can. Let's get into that. Well, I will say very quickly, as a upstater, you know, there is also a little piece of my heart that is for Wegmans as well, because I was born and raised off of that. Their subs are, you know, just probably some of the best that are out there in the streets. I ain't gonna lie about that. But anyway, so in answer to your question about how did I become such a Western Beach acolyte? I don't live too far from a Western Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was one fateful day. I was coming back from the grocery store, and I had a bunch of associated grocery store bags in my hand. And my neighbor, because, the building I live in, everyone has an opinion about what you're doing. we're very town hall. I live in a giant town hall. That's the best, if you can want to visualize that. Everyone has something to say about whatever's happening. So anyway, I get on the elevator, and one of my neighbors looks at me and is just like, why are you going to Associated? And I was like, well, look, it's close. And you're like, you're paying whatever, $80 for a week's worth of groceries. Why don't you go to Western Beef? I was like, Western Beef? She's like, yeah, Western Beef. It's right down the street. So I go in as per that suggestion. And let me tell you something, man. I walked out of there with, a week's worth of groceries, $45.
Wow.
And I was like, well, say no more, fam. Let's do this. And, there's so many characters in there, man. It's an adventure.
Yeah.
When you go in there, you might get some reggaeton over the loudspeaker. You know what I mean? The fish guy has gold teeth. I want all of it, man.
So on the tier of grocery stores, I'm trying to think like regionally. I guess we could just talk in our region because I went to Publix for the first time last year in Virginia, and that's a really nice store too. And they make good sandwiches too. But I guess in the Northeast region, where do you rank how do you rank? Give me your top five grocery stores in the Northeast.
Your top five dead or alive.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Well, again, this is,
quick and dirty.
Here.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, what I was going to say is just, this is a great plug to tell you about. I'm as you've been on my podcast, Watches and Boomboxes.
Yes, sir.
We have at the end of the show our top five of the twist.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting how this. I have no, I'm not a stranger to a top five list. Right.
Right.
I've done it at least 97 times. I have put together a list of my top five. Whatever. Right?
Yeah.
So this isn't, it's on the spot, but I can do it.
Sure.
So again, my top five grocery stores, obviously I'm going to put in first place, and I usually say no particular order, but mm-hmm. in this instance I have a first
mm-hmm.
and then two through five will fight, that's whatever.
Yeah.
But obviously Western Beef,
mm-hmm.
Is going to be number one for me. I look for an overall experience.
Yes.
With a grocery store. Well, like, what am I going to get when I walk in,
Mm-hmm.
So, from beginning to end, it's an adventure. Look, I ain't going to lie. The lines can get a little long, right? The shit could go south at any moment when someone has a coupon they want to fight over. That's going to back things up a little bit. You know what I mean? Something may not ring up correctly. That could really delay things. So, but all in all, I think as a total package, Western Beef is going to be number one.
Okay.
For me. Number two, I got to go Wegmans. I'm a Binghamton, New York native, man. So,
right.
I grew up off of Wegmans, rather.
Sure.
There was a lot of that in my life. The subs, again, I keep coming back to the subs, but they're just glorious. They got glorious subs.
Yeah.
So I gotta give them number two. Number three, given the pandemic that we are currently under,
mm-hmm.
I have been kind of relegated to a closer grocery than Western Beef. So, I fuck with Food Town.
Okay.
I've started to warm up to them. You got to be a little cagey with what you're buying in there because there's some stuff that's on sale, but then they'll try and catch you slipping on something. Like, for example, I saw I saw this, like, I used to like these, I forget the name of the person who makes these, but there's these, like, prepackaged raviolis, prepackaged tortellinis that I really like, and I used to buy them all the time. And I was in there a couple days ago, and it was, like, $8 for a pack of them. I was like, get all the fuck out of here, man. You can't, you gotta miss me with all that. That's fucking crazy. You know, in this economy,
right?
You know what I'm saying? So, like, I can't, I can't fuck with that. But all in all, like, in this time, like, you know, they've been pretty, they've kept their shelves pretty stocked as much as they can because shit sells out the day of. It's like they're just selling mixtapes right now. They fly off the shelf. So that's going to be number three. I think Foodtown is going to go my number three. Number four, you know, reaching back into my upstate roots, Price Chopper.
Oh, okay. I've seen them. I don't think I've never been in one, but I've seen it.
Okay. You know, Price Chopper. You know, I can remember as a kid when that first came on the scene. That was the big grocery store because, again, I feel like they were trying to do some, like, you know, discount. It was almost like they were trying to go on a Sam's Club or a Costco route.
Okay.
Not in that full on like bulk pricing, but they really were trying to hit a good price point.
Yeah.
So I can vividly remember Price Chopper being one of those grocery stores that I would go to a lot as a kid. So that's going to be my number four. You know, number five, you know, there's a grocery store. I think we're going back to upstate New York, so this might be a little bit of a reach for some of the listeners, but there's a grocery store when I was growing up called the Giant.
Is it just called Giant or like Giant Eagle?
No, it's not Giant Eagle. It was just the Giant, right?
Because I feel like there's two different ones, right? Because in Southern Maryland, in Virginia, we have Giant. And then Pennsylvania has one. And I wonder, is it the same thing?
I guess it would depend regionally where that is in Pennsylvania. But I do know that at the height of the Giant Empire in upstate New York, you know, they certainly had reaches into northern Pennsylvania.
Okay.
So I'd be curious to know where in PA that was.
I would say Gettysburg. I don't think I've seen them in upstate New York, but I know for a fact that Stop and Shop and Giant in the Maryland DC area are the same. Like those are like this essentially the same store.
Gotcha.
But I know that I do know of a Giant in Gettysburg, but yeah, so I don't know.
Yeah, I guess, you know, to be honest, I'd have to see the logo.
Sure.
To see it there. In fact, obviously the same team.
Okay.
But the Giant I'm talking about is in Broome County, which is where I'm from.
Okay.
And, you know, again, that is certainly another memorable grocery store for me. I worked there as a younger man.
Yes.
I did in fact get fired from there.
What happened? How'd you get fired?
Oh man. Yo, I had this boss that was a real piece of shit. And you know, I was like 16, 17. So like, I didn't necessarily give a fuck. But one day, you know, like he would just ride me and just be like, you know, you got to put the labels on this way. And like, would just yell all the time until I used some language that I don't necessarily use anymore, but I did call him a cocksucking whore.
Jesus.
At one point.
How old were you?
I'm 17. I was 17.
You're using Kathleen Turner serial mom language.
Oh yeah. I called him a cocksucking whore right in front of in front of the world. And it was funny because he was like, you're done. I was like, all right, I'll go home then. Fuck it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I guess I was so like, I don't know what I might've been. I probably was high at the time when that happened. So I should also keep that in mind. I remember I went back like for my next day, like for my shift, and like another manager came over and was like, hey, I'm pretty sure you got fired. yesterday. I was like, what? He goes, yeah, I forgot the guy's name. He was like, yeah, when he said you were done, that meant like for good. Like,
wow.
You don't have to come in anymore. And I was like, oh, word? All right. And so then I left. But know that that was, so maybe someone's like, well, why is that a favorite place for you since you got fired? But that's when I realized that I learned a very important lesson at the age of 17, is that you can get fired from a job and still be okay.
Yeah.
Like, you know, as shitty as it is, in fact, to be fired or to be let go or whatever, I think there was kind of, as time has marched on, like, I have been all right. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, so if you get fired, like, it's genuinely not the end of the world. You know, mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that from a place of privilege. I'm not saying that from, you know, a place of like, oh, well, just go find another job. Finding a job sucks. It's hard.
Yeah.
It's not an easy endeavor. But understand that there is always a job out there. It may not be the job you want.
Right.
Necessarily. It may not be your dream job. But not everyone can be a trust fund baby. You know what I mean? Like, that's a dream job.
And yeah.
That is very hard work to get to. That's a hard job to get, I guess.
Yeah. That's very true.
So, anywho, that is why I put the giant supermarkets as my fifth and final top five grocery store of all time.
All right. Yeah, that's a strong list and very strong reasons. I like to talk to people about grocery stores, I guess, because my listeners know that, like, my dad worked in the industry for 20 plus years, and some of our conversations are like about that. I think most of adulthood is talking about different routes to get somewhere, mainly to work, and then what you saved at the grocery store, what has most things. I think I find talking to people about grocery stores and sports is that way too, especially with men.
Sure.
But like, I think grocery stores and different ways to get somewhere are most of your conversations in adulthood.
Oh, yeah. Well,
yeah.
You know, I have to say, because, you know, I think it's such a universal thing we all do, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's because, like, just, you know, inside comedy world, like, I have a joke about Western beef.
Okay.
And I do it, you know, I don't do it too much anymore, but, you know, sometimes when the spirit moves me, it comes back.
Sure.
But one of inside the writing process behind it is just like, look, everyone goes to the grocery store or has been to a grocery store.
Right.
This is a universal topic that everyone has experienced. So there is so much in there that you can mine for funny that you can just kind of have your run with it. You know, like, if it's something that you want to talk about and something that you're passionate about, like, you know, so I think there is that universal appeal to grocery stores and like in talking about them.
You know? Yeah.
Like, you know, and also I forgot to mention one of the other fun things I like to do with Western Beef is I will check in there on social media.
Yeah, you do.
I sure do. Yeah. I sure do. And this has been going on for, I would say 4 years now, 5 years.
Yeah.
And whenever I check in, it's some like over the top caption. I'll write, you know, like international players ball.
Yeah.
You know, Caesar's home. I make it an effort to check in there every Easter and write, he has risen, but their prices haven't.
You know, I saw you earlier this year. It was like January when I got that fucking ticket.
That was at
Jeff's party, Jeff Cerulli's birthday. There was, I was parked illegally where I didn't know, but there was a Western Beef like, on 16th Street or something? Like,
yeah, that's the Chelsea chapter.
Okay.
I know the one you're talking about. Yeah. Really strong folks out there.
That's a good store.
Yeah, you'll get your work done in there.
You get all your stuff, you get all your meat, like your beef and obviously I guess I'm assuming you would get your meat and fish, poultry and all that.
Yeah. You know, I don't fuck, you know, ironically, as much as I like Western beef, mm-hmm. I don't eat meat that much anymore.
Okay.
And now when I say that, like, you know, I would say, you know, I certainly do have fish once in a while, but yeah, like just straight up like a steak or like a burger, like I don't really fuck with that much gotcha. Anymore. But like, you know, yeah, like a lion's share of my groceries have in fact come from the beef. They know the neighborhood, which, okay. you know, is in fact their slogan.
I guess that would be the closest one to me. And like when I would have shows, I guess, God, is that the BQE? I think when I'm going somewhere to like, I don't know, like maybe like doing a show like in downtown Brooklyn or like going to through Williamsburg, I see one. On the mm-hmm. right hand, I think it's like the right hand side of the road. If I'm going, I don't know, dude, but there's I've seen a few of them.
Yeah, they're out there, man. Well, there's also Juniors, Juniors, which is like under the umbrella of Western Beef. It's like the same logo,
oh,
but it's just called Juniors. And you know, I should also point out that, and this hasn't stopped. I've gotten. People send me Facebook messages. They text me pictures of the Western beefs they see, which I think it's like my fan mail.
Yeah.
You sure. know what I mean? Like people just want to let me know that they know that I like it. And they're like, hey, there's a Western beef over here in Bushwick, you know? And then like, I've gotten some people who really like, you know, pulled the trigger and been like, what the fuck is this Juniors? Yeah. Is it Juniors? Are they copying Western beef? I'm like, no, they're still fam. No, they're cousins. It's Western Beef's cousin. Don't flex on Juniors like that. They're still in the fam, man. You can't roll like that with them. Don't come down on them like that.
So what's it been like going to these grocery stores for you? Like is it post-apocalyptic at Western Beef?
You know what? It is and it isn't, right? Mm. Like, I think that, yes, there is definitely empty shelves, mm-hmm. which is really fucking concerning.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Like when you see that shit, because, you know, like you think of like the fucking like movies where it's like the end of the world. And, like, or you think of like, and I hate this fucking comparison, but it's like communist Russia where all the shelves are empty because, you know, everything is free, whatever that bullshit is. Right. But like, yeah, I mean, there is definitely like. It is a little disconcerting to see like empty shelves, but then also like we haven't gotten there yet, but like, it's not as if those empty shelves are signifying that it's gone forever.
Right.
Like I forgot what the fuck I was looking for like chickpeas or something a couple days ago. They were out of chickpeas. And then I went back like 2 days later and there were chickpeas. So like, it's just kind of like, it's a little bit of a nuisance, I feel like, at this point looking for stuff. But like the visual of it is kind of like, fuck, man. Like, people are losing their shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I don't know how you feel about it necessarily, but I take this seriously. Like, I think this is it is a pandemic. Like, it has been declared as such. So, like, that is what this is.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with following preventative measures, keeping a level head, getting accurate information about it is what's going to keep people sane.
Yes.
But I'm more concerned about how people are reacting to it. That's what's more concerning for me is like, this motherfucker who's going to buy like 52 rolls of toilet paper. Just like, yo,
right. The hoarding.
Like the hoarding shit, which like A, isn't helping anyone. And in fact is really offsetting and is perpetuating what we're seeing of panic.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you are now taking out of the hands of someone who needs it.
And there's people in Nassau County that are buying guns. Like some people have never had guns before. They're buying guns. Perfect. It's just like, oh, great. And so it's like I'm with you. I think I've been saying on the show, like the last couple episodes I posted, I've been saying that we will get through this. It might be a couple weeks. I think they're saying like it's going to be through July. I don't think it's going to be that long. I think they're saying that to prepare us. And then in about a month, in mid-April maybe, when they say, okay, we've would trim the curve or whatever the fuck they're saying,
Right.
And then I think we'll go back to normal. My thing is just, you know, the effect that it's had on restaurants, service workers, obviously the people in the medical fields and things like that. Like, everybody's hurting now. Everybody worldwide is affected by this. So it's just whether you have it or not, you know, you're affected. And if you haven't lost somebody directly, you know somebody. Yeah.
You know someone who at least knows somebody.
Right. So it's just like, that's like my thing. So it's just like, if you can do something to take your mind off of it. Like, I played 2K and got my ass beat before I got on the horn with you.
Right.
And, you know, just chilling. So what is it like for you? This, 'cause you're an educator, you're a teacher.
Right.
So what's going on? Obviously, I know the schools are shut down, but are you still active in some sort of way?
So basically what's happening right now is, you know, 'cause I work in the private sector,
okay,
if you will, yeah, which like has, you know, they're following the DOE in some light, right? Like, before, you know, like when this broke, right? Like we were heading towards spring break. We left for spring break early.
Uh-huh.
So like we were 3 days out before we were supposed to actually dismiss for spring break.
Yeah.
So that was, I guess, kind of like a difference between what my experience has been and like public school teachers have seen.
Right.
Some of what's been going on is what they're calling distance learning,
mm-hmm,
which is basically, it's just a fancy term for like now, classes are online. So curriculum has moved, online, you know, so like, and again, through, and this is what kind of separates this from like the plague of 1918 is that like, we have technology and we are implementing technology and we're using it to kind of, you know, bring some connectivity and normalcy. So anyway, so there's been a lot of distance learning, you know, a lot of my fellow teachers out there are doing that. You know, they've put their curriculum online, you know, they have classes, you know, so there is still learning happening. You know, I think there's been, you know, I've just seen at least through emails and stuff, like there's, you know, how to talk to your kids about this how to talk to your kids about coronavirus, what, you know, how to manage their anxiety, how do you manage your anxiety?
Right.
Because, you know, you still, you know, like as this has affected everyone, like specifically for teachers, it's like, well, you know, my job is human contact.
Right.
Like, mm-hmm, that is the lion's share of my job, is standing in front of a group of students and teaching them. Right. And that's not happening. So how do I adjust to that? So,
yeah,
it's, you know, it's certainly been a shift. You know, I can say that I'm fortunate enough in being a educator that I'm salaried.
Yeah.
So like I still am getting paid throughout this.
Good.
And now if y'all motherfuckers think y'all gonna run up in my house because I got money, please understand that it's teacher money. I am not this ain't Amazon money.
Yeah. Right?
Like I'm not still getting paid through Amazon. I'm still getting paid as a teacher. So still kind of poor. So don't feel like I have money.
I'm in the same boat as you. I totally get it.
Yeah. So like, you know, I'm fortunate in that respect, but you know, there definitely are like, people who work in education who are hourly and they are day to day. So like, if you work in the after school program, as far as I understand, you don't get paid.
Yeah.
Like you know, you are paid for each after school session you have. So if that ain't happening, you ain't getting paid.
And what grade are you teaching again? What grades?
So I work with the younger kids, so I'm like kindergarten through fourth grade.
Yeah.
So, you know, and again, they certainly, and they know, like, how can you not?
Right, like, right, yeah.
If you, you know, if you're so lucky to get to watch the news all day, it is all that we are talking about right now. So.
Yeah. It's hard to watch the news. Like I'll do the local news and I do Twitter. I have a good good batch of like people that I follow and news outlets, and so to try not to get freaked out, you know.
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, and I think that kind of comes back to what we were talking about earlier, of just like, if you are staying informed from reputable sources, right?
Yeah.
Like, don't get your fucking news from that wacko on Facebook who's like, the coronavirus was made by the Mexicans.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right, I feel like that's not the most reputable place to get the news from.
Right.
So, you know, make sure that you are kind of filtering out what is not information for what is in fact information.
You know, so, yeah. So what are you doing to, do I want to shift to that? Why not? Whatever. What are you doing to cope with, I mean, you have your lady with you, but
sure, yeah.
What are you doing to entertain yourself? Like, what are you watching? What are you reading?
Oh man. So reading wise, I actually just bought a book. I got it before the plague. Remember when you could go outside and buy things?
Yeah.
Do you remember? Remember that? It was like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
We could do that stuff. So I actually went out and bought a book. It's called Low Lives, the American. It's like Low Lives, the American Story, I think.
Okay.
And it's a book about, it was written by a gentleman named Brack Lowe. And it's about this gang in Brooklyn in the 80s, early 90s, who would boost polo clothing. And it's like just kind of gives us like a story of what their lives were like then. Right. And then there's these little sort of like interviews of fellow low lives about what was going on, like hanging out on 42nd Street. You know, running up in Macy's and stealing a bunch of shit. So I've been reading that, which has been pretty fun. I've watched, what show was I watching? I was watching High Fidelity.
What'd you think of that?
Hulu.
Oh, also, back to your book. I feel like that was discussed on a documentary also. Like people stealing.
Yes, it was.
Which one was it?
Well, I mean, there's been a couple documentaries.
Yeah.
One Complex did called Horsepower.
Okay.
Which was about polo. And, you know, they touched on low lives.
Yeah.
During that. Very Ralph, which was a documentary about Ralph Lauren.
Okay.
And it was just on HBO. There was a section of that where they mentioned low lives, which like, if you're talking about polo, you can't have a conversation about that brand without talking about, low lives.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was a section in there, about them, Thurston Howell III, who, was one of the founders, the originators of low lives. Was in it. In fact, he came up with the name Low Lives. They interviewed him in that documentary, which I thought was pretty dope. But like, they had to talk about it. These were the guys that, you know, during that era, were just made it cool.
Yeah,
they were those dudes. So
I was fortunate. I don't know, when you were growing up, did you wear your street clothes, or did you have to wear uniforms when you were coming up?
I never had to wear a uniform.
Okay.
I always wore just like, you know, whatever, jeans and
t-shirts,
whatever,
and stuff.
Sneakers and shit.
Yeah.
Whatever the hell I wore to.
I feel like
school.
I lucked out, man, because we wore uniforms, and by the time all that stuff became cool, I remember like in sixth grade, I wanted my parents did buy me the, you know, those, like, they're not the baseball uniform, but it's the short set that Another Bad Creation and Belle Biv DeVoe wore.
Yeah.
Pinstripe.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yep.
That was the shit. Like, I had a New York Mets outfit, and that was I had that, and I remember we had like a class trip and I wore it to King's Dominion to the theme park,
you were cool as shit.
I loved it, dude, cuz I wanted to be like in Another Bad Creation, you know. Like,
oh man, yeah. That was the style, man. That was the flavor back then.
That's how you knew. Like, yeah, it's like hip hop and R&B. Like that was a trend. So I would have one of those outfits And then, you know, you'd like your sneakers and stuff, but I don't think I became that obsessed with clothes and stuff like that until maybe I'm not really that obsessed now. Everybody likes a nice outfit, but like sneakers and stuff, I think it became like in my like mid to late 30s. Cause I think,
interesting.
Yeah. Cause you know, being in the theater scene, I guess in my 20s, like when I was coming up college, I was more like, you know, I'd wear some khakis or I liked the sweaters. I wanted to be the black cast member of Dawson's Creek. So I could be a principal, but I think, it was sort of like, you know what it was? I dressed like Kanye West, like college dropout Kanye West.
Yep.
Before, I would wear style. And I loved Eddie Bauer. Cause it was affordable. It was nice clothes. It was affordable. They didn't have any logos on it. And it's like my dad will still wear some of my Eddie Bauer shit. Like he'll wear like an old jacket of mine or something or whatever. But anyway, I like that sort of stuff too.
I guess that's a hand me up then.
I guess so. Yeah, it's still fit them. Yeah, but I those clothes are so durable, and you know they're just good quality clothes. But like the sneakers, like I'll follow all these sneaker sites and stuff, and there'll be a couple that catch my eye. But
you know, I'm a Nike head.
Me too.
But I wouldn't consider myself a sneaker head.
Neither am I. I don't either. No,
I definitely have, you know, I have two pairs of Jordans, I think. And I like,
yeah,
one of them's all, one pair is fucked up. And then the other pair, like I barely wore, cause they're like, I bought them and they like didn't fit, you know, but I was like, fuck it, they're Jordans. And
yeah,
I like wore them twice. I was like, I'm not wearing these anymore. cause it's hurt my feet.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I mean, at least when it comes to sneakers, like, I I wear polo sneakers.
Oh, you do? Like, I know you wear polo shirts. I know one time.
This is true.
The last time I saw you, it wasn't the last. In January, you had on a polo shirt and I had on a polo shirt.
That's important. I'm glad you did that. I'm really happy you did that.
They're just good quality, though, too.
And, you know, it's like, I think it, not only is it like a good quality shirt, but like, the style of it is so iconic.
And, yeah.
You know, I think that, you know, like for whatever, say what you will, but like you could wear something from Polo from 92, 93 today.
Right.
And it still looks dope.
Yeah.
Right? And in fact, they have, you know, and Polo has kind of, I think they, you know, they've admitted it in some fashion. I mean, they've featured the Lowlives in a documentary, but like the way that they rocked certain shit from the 90s, Polo now is like, look, we can reissue this shit and we will fucking sell it out.
Yeah. Right?
So a lot of like the, you know, like the Ski Man shirts, you know, like different sort of like the Tennis Man, like all this sort of stuff that came out in the 90s that was dope, they have reissued them. And they're doing it like, it's just, I think with Polo, it's something that like, it is, it's a, again, it's a timeless, timeless brand. And also there is like a, there's a subculture to it.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
When you see, you know, you walk around Brooklyn and you can see someone who's decked out in Polo and either they are in fact a lowlife or they're, you know, and there's people who like, I mean, like I'm not a lowlife. I like Polo and I wear it.
Yeah.
But you can like see somebody, you have a conversation about what they're wearing. Like, you know, I mean, I can remember so many times that I've like gone to a bar and I seen somebody with like a, you know, like a stadium hat, like a 92 stadium hat. And I'm like, oh shit, that's a dope hat. And they see my shirt, like, yeah, that's a big symbol shirt. And then we'll just start talking about Polo.
Tell your story about the Griselda cats that you met one time in a bar and you guys.
Oh yeah. Shout out C Black, man.
Yeah.
You know, I was over at Beer Wax. Also shout out to Beer Wax. Shout out to Chris Meister and everybody over there. And support them, by the way, because I hate to bring it back to our bullshit times right now, but hey, in New York City, all bars and restaurants are not open. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, you, you got to get out there and support these places, man. So anyway, I say all that to say that when I was at Beer Wax and I met C Black there, and I had on some polo shit. I was wearing something.
Oh, explain Griselda to the people that don't know, because I know a little bit, but I know you know more because upstate New York. Yeah.
Do I ever?
Yeah.
You know, Griselda Records, a couple cats out of Buffalo, very dope. If you like that gritty sound, and street sound, you know, West Side Gun, Benny the Butcher, and Conway the Machine.
Yeah, yeah.
Very, very dope. Listen to their entire catalog. They're great. I listen to them all the time. And they just signed, this other dude, Boldy James.
Yeah, I just heard of him. Yeah, the Pitchfork just tweeted about him. I'm not like, oh, I'm a Pitchfork guy, but I still follow them, and I saw them, and I was kind of skeptical. So when you said, I went and favorited him on Tidal, so I'm going to check him out. So I'm glad.
Oh, definitely.
I feel cool now because you mentioned him.
Oh. Well, you know what? Just know that I'm honored that I was able to do that for you.
Yeah,
because I'm certainly not the coolest dude out.
Well, because I told you that time at Jeff's party that I was just like, yeah, dude, I just fucking have my Tidal playlist, and it's just, I'm listening to Colin from 97 and like Little Brother, and it still sounds great, but it's like some of that shit is like from over 20 years ago.
And that's what's sign of the times, right?
Yeah,
is like when you put that in, you're like, yo, I remember when this shit came out. And then it's like, this music is able to buy alcohol.
Yep.
That album could fight in a war if it wanted to.
Right.
But anyway, so I just, real quick, man, Boldy James, he's just, I think they just signed him to Griselda. Mm-hmm. He's great, man. He's out of Detroit. Really enjoy his music.
I love those latest Detroit artists, man.
Yo, man. I mean, look, Royce the 5'9 is arguably one of the dopest MCs out, underground legend.
Yeah.
His newest album is fucking amazing.
Okay, I got
to
get into that.
I've been listening to it. Yeah, it's really well done. And he's just such a talented dude, man.
Okay.
But anyway, in short, go listen to, Griselda, all those guys. About how I met C Black.
Yeah.
I was at Beer Wax. Sky Zoo was doing these Jazz Sundays.
Sky Zoo, friend of the podcast.
Yeah, friend of the show.
Yeah.
Very dope MC.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing this thing where, I guess on Instagram, he Sundays, he'll post like his favorite jazz musicians.
Yes.
Like, he does a hashtag for it and everything. And he in connection with Beer Wax, decided it'd be dope for him to come in and play some of his favorite jazz records.
Mm-hmm.
2 to 4. So, you know, when bars open, please go out and check that out. So I went and I was going to go because, you know, I was like, I'm not too far away from Beer Wax. So I was like, I'm going to go check it out. And I went and I had on some polo shit, and C Black and I just talked polo for some time. Then we started talking about Griselda and shit. So.
Yeah, that's cool, man. Yeah, that's how it happens. That's how you make connections, man. I know you got to go in a bit. I wanted to get your thoughts because I consider you like a hip hop connoisseur. That I really enjoyed this this Wu-Tang Clan and American Saga. Did you get a chance to check that out?
I did. I sure did.
What'd you think of it?
Like a motherfucker, I did. I liked it.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. And again, perhaps I am biased because if you listen to Swatches and Boomboxes, you would know that I am a certified Wu-Tangologist.
Yes.
When we talk about Wu-Tang on the show, I got you covered. I really did. I liked the show a lot. I felt like if you got into Wu-Tang American Saga,
mm-hmm.
right? If you got into it and you wanted historical accuracy,
mm-hmm.
then you're going to be disappointed. Okay. That's not what the show is for.
Like, why do you think they did it that way?
I think they did it that way because, like, they had, like, they just put out the Showtime documentary. Yes.
Yeah.
About Wu-Tang. Mm-hmm. So it's like, do you, like, if you wanted to know the start of Wu-Tang, why would we remake a thing we just did?
Right, like, right, right.
I don't think it would make a lot of sense for them to go to Hulu and be like, all right, well, now we're just going to tell the same story that we just told on Showtime. It didn't make any sense.
Yeah, that's true.
So, and also, like, you know, I think they had some fun with, you know, it reminded me of, like, fan fiction
mm-hmm.
of Wu-Tang. Like, what if this happened?
Right? Yeah.
And, you know, like, and so they had some liberty with it. I mean, like, there certainly were some factual moments within the Wu-Tang American saga that is stuff that really happened. But then there's other stuff that, you know, like, wasn't real, like, that, or that wasn't accurate. Like, mm-hmm. it's fiction. Like, it's sure. a story that they're telling, you know? Yeah. So I enjoyed it. I thought it was really well done. You know, I think, like, you could see RZA's imprint on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's the other important part of this.
Yeah.
Another important part of American Saga is that, like, all of the members of Wu-Tang were contributing to it and got credit for telling that story, but also RZA, I think, was co-producer of that.
Right.
So, like, he certainly had his say of what was happening.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I really... Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say just one more thing real quick about sure. it. Is like, I was listening to some podcast where Alex Zhu, I think, the guy who directed it, he was working with RZA on it. And, you know, he said, like, you know, there were definitely moments where they were kind of like going back and forth about how they wanted the scene to look. And Alex was inevitably like, well, look, this is RZA's story. Like, I ultimately have to defer to him. Like, I may have my input on it.
Yeah.
But what am I going to do? Say, like, no, that's not how this happened. Let's do it this way. Like, no, this was his story. So, you know, he deferred to RZA on a lot of it, which I thought was important for that story.
Yeah.
You were going to say something. I was yammering here.
No, that's why I wanted you on the show. I had liked that episode that they did when he was filming that video, the Raheem, the Prince Rakim. Is it Rocky? You call him Prince Rakim or was it?
Yeah,
Raheem?
Prince Rakim was when he first got a record deal, he was Prince Rakim.
Because I remember that when I was a kid and I didn't put two and two together. I remember it used to come on the box. And then
and then
when I saw the doc, I was like, oh, shit. I was like, oh, my God. I didn't know because I would not consider myself. I'm like more of an R&B guy. I could tell you more about Eric Sermon working with Alfonso Hunter, who is like an R&B singer that had like an album in '96. So, like, I could tell you about like a guy like Sam Salter, like a guy that did like a couple of albums and had some really good songs. So it was just like, even being a East Coast guy growing up in the Mid-Atlantic region, it was just like, okay, the Wu-Tang Clan, yeah, these guys are good. And I don't think my appreciation for like that gritty, hardcore New York rap really kicked in until maybe ninth grade. So like 14 years old. I mean, that's still kind of early, but it was still sort of like a thing. Oh, sorry, that's somebody calling me. Awkward.
No worries.
Yeah, but it's still sort of like that thing where it's like, these dudes are good. And then when you really have guys tell you about, yo, you need to get into Method Man, because for me, the bass was like Tribe Called Quest.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like Keith Murray and Eric Sermon, Redman, Method Man. And Method Man was like the bridge into Wu-Tang Clan. But everybody did really love Old Dirty Bastard. He was kind of like the guy like in high school that everybody just like fucking, I remember, was that like 94 or 95?
When his album came out?
Yeah, his solo.
Uh, I want to say it was 95.
Okay.
Because Wu-Tang came out in 90. Yeah. Because Wu-Tang dropped in 94.
Uh-huh.
And then, so then the rest of them, you know, followed suit. So I'm pretty sure it's 95.
Yeah, it is. Okay.
When,
yeah.
When this shit came out.
Yeah. That, yeah. I remember people going crazy over that.
Oh my God. Well, you know, I mean, like, he had that, just that undeniable charisma.
Yeah.
Like, he was such an entertaining and enigmatic human being.
Yeah.
That, like, every time he opened his mouth, you didn't know what the fuck he was going to say.
Yeah.
First. And he was just that dude. He was so charming and just fucking hilarious.
There's a story about him that I have to tell you off mic, because the person that told me the story, I can't really talk about him because he's connected to all this stuff.
So I'm excited. I'm excited to hear that.
Remind me when we close to talk about that.
Absolutely.
So what are you watching? Are you watching anything on TV that you like that you can recommend to folks?
Oh yeah. You know, well, I have time. So, as many folks do, to watch TV.
Yeah.
So, you know, a couple of shows I've been watching that, like, I think are worth, well, I liked You.
I did too. Yeah.
I really liked it. I've joked about it on stage, but I'm like, yeah, it's like Sex and the City for sociopaths.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just a guy trying to figure it out. You know, he's just trying to find love.
He's trying to find it.
He's trying to find it. And when he finds it, he keeps it
yeah.
in a box. And he just can't let it leave. You know what I mean? So it's like you root for him and you just hope it works out.
Yeah.
But no, I really enjoyed the show. You know, it's just the writing was good. I think Penn Bagley, he did an amazing job. Like, he's just funny. Like, you know, what I liked about the show is, like, yes, his character Joe or Will, he's horrible.
Yes. Right?
He's a terrible human being. But what makes shows so great is the people. It's almost like Dexter, right?
Yes. Because
it's like the people that he kills and the people that he goes after, there's something, they're bad too.
Yeah.
So there's this gray morality that exists within the show that I really enjoyed. I enjoyed that part of it a lot. And it was a fun show. Like, I don't want to say fun, happy go lucky, but like an engaging piece of TV that I liked. Another show I started watching, High Fidelity.
Yes, and what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I watch it. There's some episodes that I'm just like, yes, I'm fully into it. And then there's others that I'm just like checking my phone and I like come in. I'm like, oh, she's doing that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's a thing.
She's kind of an asshole.
She's an asshole.
And like, hot one, but an asshole.
She's hot. And I like, she just strikes me like, and I'm sure they're going for this, but like, she's like an angsty 20-something doing angsty 20-something shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, she, like, keeps a list of her heartbreaks. Like, what?
Yeah.
Like, you're still tripping off that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, like, there's those sorts of things where I'm just like, all right, I'm not on your team for this. I think you're... Go ahead.
How do you feel about the episode where they showed her ex-boyfriend that's gay? Do you feel like they shoehorned that in, or was it to like just say, hey, she's kind of an asshole, let's just try to get this guy who's a decent guy, let's just show his love life, or what?
That was like one of the first episodes, right?
No. Like, you find out he's gay, and then she just tells you that guy that they connected so much, but then he realized he was gay, and then you kind of don't hear about him, and then they kind of bring it together like in like a couple of episodes before the season finale.
I don't know if they necessarily. I don't feel like they shoehorned it in.
Okay.
And I say that just in so much that, like, well, she's the focal point, right?
Right,
like, she's
right.
the main character. So, mm-hmm. like, you know, I don't know if they're necessarily, I don't think that like they're trying to divert that and then go into his story so much as it is her story. But also I think they were looking to normalize it. And not to kind of move into the space where it's just like, oh, he's gay and he doesn't know, that certainly could be some story, but like in this instance he was just like, oh, you know what, I'm gay. And
yeah,
that's just part of my identity. They certainly get into it later on in the season. Which, you know, fun fact, character, the actor who plays, I forget the guy's name in the show, guy's name David, he was my bartender at my local bar.
The High Fidelity guy that played the gay guy?
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
Shit. Okay. Oh, yeah. Let's get his name. Cause I'm looking it up.
It's David Holmes, I think.
Okay.
I want to say it's David. David, shout out to you, David.
Nice.
He was my bartender, for a while.
David H. Holmes. Okay.
David H. Holmes. Yeah. He used to work at my local bar. And I remember when he got the role for this.
Mm-hmm.
And it was last couple shifts, he was just like, look, you know, I've got this really big thing coming up. I can't tell you, but like, if it in fact goes through, yeah, I'm done. I'm not a bartender anymore because I do this. And sure enough, this was the thing.
Yeah.
This was the project that he landed. So like, it is very surreal to see him on camera. And I'm just like, that guy used to make this drink. I used to drink this drink called, it was a vodka pineapple, and he'd call it the Waikiki.
Okay.
And I always, whenever he's on camera, like, oh, the guy about to make a Waikiki.
Good for him.
Anyway.
Because my thing was, like, there was some talk. I was kind of paying attention to it this week. This past week, I was trying to think of the one show that I was watching. There's a show. What's with this pretty light-skinned girl? She's like, what the hell is that show on Freeform? Oh, shit.
On Freeform?
With the girls, and they're like in the city, and they're dating. I watched like the first season. Oh, my God. There were two black women discussing it on Twitter, and they were making her, because this character was like, she's gay, and they were like, it seems like, why do the gay characters always have to have, like, they get treated like shit. It's not like they're calling them, you're fucking gay, but it's just like the life around them is just like so fucked up, and it's so bad that the straight characters don't have to come out so much of a, they don't have to deal with all this shit, that they're just, oh, this I'm trying to get this job and I want this guy to text me back, but the gay character is like got such a cross to bear. I got to figure out what the fuck I was watching. What the hell is this show? Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Well, I will say, as you're looking that up, one of the other sort of like my like, oh, shit, this like about High Fidelity, mm-hmm. is they shot it in my neighborhood.
Oh, they did?
Like, I'm not too far away from all the places that they're in. You know what I mean? So, like, when they're outside the pizza place,
uh-huh.
like that's Joe and Sal's pizza.
Yeah.
You know, like the Gladys, uh-huh. like I know, like that ain't too far from me. So like a lot of like the, and I remember where they were shooting it.
Yeah.
Like I remember seeing them in the neighborhood and everything. And like, there's one scene where, Zoe, she walks past this 99 cent store. And I tried to go in there that day they shot, and I couldn't. Like I had to buy some shit, and they're like, we can't let you in right now.
Oh, the PA told you you can't fucking go in here.
And you know, look, this neighborhood, like you can't flee. Like you're trying to tell people they can do. Yeah, that's gonna be a conversation. So he told me, I'll never forget it. He told me, he's like, yo, man, I can't let you go in there right now. I was like, why?
Yeah.
He goes, because we're shooting a TV show. Like, what show? High Fidelity. I was like, what's it about?
And what's about, yo?
Yeah, and he's telling me, and I just go, oh, well, I looked at him, I was fucking around. I was like, yo, man, I'm high right now. Just let me in.
That's hilarious.
He's like, I can't.
I've done stuff in Brooklyn where I know how that is. Yeah. The Bold Type is the show that I was talking about in this pretty girl, and she's actually the brown girl in the show, Aisha D. Her character's in a same-sex relationship. And it just seems like these women on Twitter were talking about how, because I think that's one of the reasons why I stopped watching, is just like, why is her life so fucking hard? Like, why is it, it's just like, it's, she's brown and gay, and it's just like, it just keeps getting pounded and pounded in. And these women were just kind of affirming what I was thinking, and I guess it had gotten worse. But then there was something else that I was watching that I was just like, why are the gay characters, can't they just be gay and just live their life and be complex characters without the world being thrown down on them and shit?
Well, and like there is that, like, and I think that's a valid argument. I'm just like, look, you know, there's more to me than me being gay. There's more to me than, you know, me being trans. Like, I also have a life outside of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, yes, representation is important.
Right.
And I would like to be in this scene as this, as my identity. But, like, I also do other stuff, too. So, I'd like to talk about that at some point. And, like, I want that to be part of my narrative.
Right.
Not me, like, you know, being, like you said, like having the world just crush me at every fucking moment.
I guess it's just baby steps, but it was just, I just noticed that. I think it was like a trailer I was watching to this indie movie that's right up my alley, like some coming of age story. This young woman realizes that she's gay and she's like having a relationship with a young girl that's like popular. And then it's like, we're going to kick her out the school. And this shit is fucking crazy. I was like, oh, shit. I'm sure it's going to be interesting, but it's just, I'm in my queue on Amazon or whatever, but it's just like, Jesus Christ. It's like, I mean, come on. I can't remember the other thing that I was watching, but it just seemed like a couple of these shows that's like, fuck. Cause I'll watch anything. If it looks interesting to me, I'll watch it. Especially if there's an actor or actress that I like, you know.
Well, and also, you know, there's two things I wanted to say. One, like, that was one of the other things I like about High Fidelity is, like, there are so many people I knew in real life on the show.
Okay.
And I was like, you know, and I always get a kick out of that.
Yeah, of course.
Because it's like Kevin Iso, who I, like, I'd seen him, you know, he's another really funny comic. Who are like, I saw he's on the show. I'm like, oh, that's dope, man. Marie Faustin's in there too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's just really cool to see folks that you, you know, are on the scene with.
Yeah.
In that show. So, like, you know, I think that's just really cool. So, there was something. There's another. I don't know if we're kind of jumping all over the place, but there's another show. I just watched the first episode and I got the biggest kick out of it. It was Black Monday.
Okay, yeah, it's a good show.
Yeah, I really, it's, you know, it's definitely like, it's a lot of yelling, and, you know, I mean, it's Wall Street. That's not the most quiet group of people that you're going to encounter.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
But, like, just the jokes are funny, the writing's funny. Don Cheadle is fucking hilarious.
He's one of the greats.
Oh, he's so funny, man.
Yeah.
And he's got a fucking Lamborghini limousine.
Yeah.
So fucking absurd as a concept. But, like, yeah, like, I only got into the first episode of it, but I really got into it.
It's good.
And also, like, you know, I think what's important is, like, to really appreciate it, I feel like you have to remember, you have to have lived through the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, no, you know, just get the references, you know, like, he's got, like, a robot maid. And I remember those, like, that was, like, the pinnacle of just, like, whoa, that is opulence right there. A little fucking robot, you can tell what to do.
Yeah, but dude, now it's good. Courtney Farrington and I were messaging back and forth. He's like, yeah, you know, I'm getting into Black Monday. And I was like, yeah, season two is coming back, but they're putting out, I think you can stream a couple of the episodes, but I think maybe what I'll do is just wait for most of them to drop and then binge. I think I'm and just, I'm just programmed to that shit now.
Are you? Well, I was gonna ask you. So, are you a binger now?
I like to. Whenever I can, I like to.
That sounds like a slur of sorts.
Are you a binger? You fucking binger.
I won't let this binger near my house.
Yeah.
But you are a binger?
I do. Like, I'm excited about this Reese Witherspoon and Kerry Washington show on Hulu. Little Fires Everywhere, and they got the first three out. And I'm like, ugh. That's like, I know I'm going to like it. Two of my favorite actresses. I know I'm going to like it, but you giving me these three, I'm going to tear through those and then be waiting. But Hulu likes to do that. They like to,
make you wait.
So, but there's plenty of stuff to watch, but I definitely like to binge when I can.
I mean, you know, it's funny. I like, you know, I'm a little bit late to the dance of sort, I guess, where like, I'll like start watching these shows and shit. Like, yo, I love this show. It's great. And then I'll rip through like fucking 10 episodes. But like in my head, I'm like, oh man, that's how I grew up watching TV, is like the new episode would come out. We'd watch it. And we'd have to wait for we'd have to wait until next week. But I guess I feel like we've kind of moved in this space where like, yeah, people binge like that. And that's their expectation.
Yeah. The only show like, you go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, and like, that is our expectation, and I feel like people, I don't know if they get turned off necessarily from a show, if they're just like, oh, I can't watch the next one.
Yeah.
But then part of me thinks like, in this sort of business model of sort where it's like, I have a television show, and if I only have one episode, you have so much access to so much content,
right,
that like, if I don't give you every episode I have, you may just be like, well, fuck it. I'm going to go watch something else because I can see it all.
Yeah. There's plenty. The only show that I watch weekly is Better Call Saul.
Okay.
That's the only one that I've like, that I kind of just, I'll DVR it, then watch it either the next. No, I'm lying to you. Better Call Saul and God Friended Me on CBS. That's my.
Those are your like mainstays.
Those are my favorites. Yeah.
I saw like commercials for God Friended Me, and is it worth a jump? I mean, it's your mainstay, so it sounds like it is.
I like it. It's kind of like Ghost Rider. If you remember that PBS show, we're about the same age.
Yeah.
I got 2 years on you, but Ghost Rider, if you like that, mixed with Touched by an Angel, it's definitely very saccharine.
Sure.
But I don't mind that. I don't mind it. But I like that kid, that guy, Brandon Michael Hall, I think his name is.
Okay.
He's a good actor, and I dig it, man. It's good seeing black people. Even he's not kind of a magical Negro, but he's not. You know, but
he's more mystical than magical.
He's a little more grounded because, like, his father his father now is the archbishop of this church, and his mother died from cancer when he was young. So he's kind of struggling with his belief in God, and then God friends him on Facebook and gives him these missions to like help people, and he enlists his friends to help him out, where you help people and he gets a friend request, and then that's how the episode will start, where he's got to help people, and he kind of has to wiggle his way into those people's lives when they don't want his help, but then they realize that they do need him, and he's trying to figure out who's sending him the request. So it's like
interesting.
It's a good show.
Now, does Morgan Freeman play God?
No, we don't know who plays God yet. We just know Joe Morgan is his dad. So he's another like Joe Morton rather
plays it. Plays his. It's important that some sort of Morgan be involved. Yeah. It's God, right?
He's one of those. Morgan Freeman. Yeah, he's one of those grounded black actors, one of those great black actors So it's a fun show, but I really dig it. But
okay,
yeah.
Well, I will certainly, because again, for the foreseeable future, Mr. Lambert.
Yeah.
I got plenty of time to watch things, to create things. So
yeah.
You know, who knows? I might write another book.
Yeah. Talk about your book. Talk about grad school, a $70,000 phone charger.
I will. That was my seat. Look, my Segway game is strong.
I know you. You do this. You do this. I know who. Yeah, I know who I'm talking to.
Mm-hmm. It's not Jim Jelly, Jim Jam.
And if you didn't, I was going to lead you there.
Look, steel sharpens steel.
Yeah,
Chris.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
We ain't got to talk about it.
Yeah. We'll get into it, man. Yeah. Fuck it. So yeah, I wrote a book. It's called Grad School, a $70,000 phone charger. It's really dope. I love it. I hope other people like it too. But basically, so the pitch of the book is, it is all true. It is about my experience in grad school from the day, or I'm sorry, like a week before I decided to go to grad school, all the way up to graduation. And it just chronicles all the crazy shit I've seen at the school. You know, and like for example, I don't know if you know this, and this is true. You can be suspended from grad school. I don't know if you that can happen to you.
I think we did an episode of your show or something the day or while you were going through that, I believe.
I believe
we were hanging out at one point when you were telling me about this.
Oh yeah. You can definitely be suspended from grad school. I did it. It was very interesting to watch that transpire. I, in fact, then got a letter in the mail and emailed to me saying that I was suspended. And to kind of give you an idea of the school I'm dealing with, they had the wrong teacher's name on the email that suspended me.
Mm.
So, you know, just to kind of show you, no one's proofreading anything. They just sent me an email. It's like, you're suspended by this completely different person. And so then I emailed them back and was like, yeah, who's Tracy so-and-so? And they're like, oh, that's the wrong person. I'm like, so you just boilerplate emailed me my suspension letter. You just copy and pasted it. Is that my understanding? Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah. And I was like, so I'm not really suspended then, right? And they're like, no. And I was like, all right, cool. I'll go back. So
Jesus.
Yeah. It's a hot mess, man. But it's a fun book. You know, hopefully.
How do people get it? I have to buy a copy too.
Well, sir, this is how it works. Because I am 100%. This is all grassroots right now. I don't go through Amazon to sell my book. Because they do take the physical copies. They take a lot of money out of you to do it. So I'm like, fuck that. I'm just gonna go independent with it. So if you want to buy a book, DM me. You know, I'm at Jim Search on all social media. DM me. The book is $9.99 plus shipping and handling. You know, I get your email, or I get your mailing address. I put it in the mail to you. You pay for shipping and handling, and it comes to you. I autograph every copy. And yeah, you know, I take Venmo, PayPal, you know, Cash App. Great. I'm on all the money apps.
Cool.
So yeah, that's how you get it, man. Just email me or DM me or email me, jimsearchcomedy@gmail.com. You can email me if you want to do that, or you can DM me to get a copy of the book. It's a great read. It's 50 pages, super short. They're fun little stories. So do it.
Cool.
Email me, get in touch with me.
And your podcast, Swatches and Boomboxes. Plug that also.
Oh, yeah. Swatches and Boomboxes. It's a great podcast. It's all about 90s hip-hop, 90s, early 2000s. We've had Chris on the show so many times. It's me and my homie, Neil Charles. We talk about our favorite albums from the 90s. We've done some great interviews. We had Ralph McDaniels. If you know anything about 90s hip hop, he is one of the pioneers, in fact, created the music video, the concept of a music video, that was him. So, you know, that's a great interview. So go download that one. And also, I have another podcast coming out soon, hopefully this week. It's called Open Bar Talk. It's the Open Bar Talk podcast. It is a it's a series of interviews I've done with some of my bartending friends about the crazy shit they've seen from behind the bar. So it's a fun show. When it comes out, download it, Open Bar Talk podcast. It's a great listen. You're going to love them. Their interviews are hilarious. Some of the stories bartenders got, man. Whew.
Great. And you were also featured on Bar Rescue. How can people get it, see that episode?
So you, if you want to go see that episode of Bar Rescue, it is at season six. The episode's called Tanked and Toasty. Mm-hmm. You can find that on a Paramount Network website. If you have cable, it's on demand. You can find it. It's season six, Tanked and Toasty. It's a great, an amazing episode. Me and my co-host Max Cohen, we ran a podcast called Shut It Down, the Bar Rescue Recap podcast. And that's how we got on the show. So go, go find that episode. It's amazing. I must say that, you know, it was my official television debut. I was camera ready. I just showed up on set. Mm-hmm. I was ready to go. They didn't have to doctor me up or anything. I was perfect. So,
oh, great.
Just go check me out.
Jim, this has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for being on the show in these trying times. And hopefully we did some of the Lord's work and entertained some people.
I like to think so too. Yeah. Look, man, I was talking to my girlfriend before I got on the podcast. I'm like, I am always the host, never the hosted. So it was really nice to be the hosted and to be asked questions. So
very good.
I appreciate that, Chris. Thanks for having me, man.
All right, man. Stay on the line. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. We will talk to you next time. Peace.